Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Sewage and Water Board suddenly finds $25 million in accounts mistakenly marked restricted, and then they realize that there's a $21.9 million reimbursement from FEMA. And as the Sewage and Water Board saga continues, what may initially look like a negative very well may turn out to be a positive. And joining us on the line is David Hammer, WWL-TV investigative reporter, and also a member of the Down the Drain investigative team. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, thanks for having me back. And I think you're absolutely right that looking at this as a potential positive, it's hard to do when you get these kind of shocking revelations, but it may very well be just a function of the fact that there are people who are finally getting a handle on these things.
So tell us, how did we come to recognize or realize that we had $25 million sitting in two different accounts that were mistakenly marked restricted?
Well, I'm trying to get some more details on exactly how it was discovered and who was responsible in the first place. But the way that it was discovered is that Ghassan Korban came in about 6 months ago as the new executive director of the Sewage and Water Board. He was brought in by Mayor Cantrell from Milwaukee, a total outsider. And he's started to kind of look at all of the processes with fresh eyes. Don't forget that after the August flooding in 2017 and Cedric Grant was removed from that position by Mitch Landrieu or resigned, and there were a string of interim directors, I think seven of them altogether over the course of the next year and year plus. So there really wasn't a lot of steady leadership there. And so then you end up with Korban coming in, and he has really taken fresh eyes to look at these issues. And so they were going over things with their new financial team, and they discovered that there was some money placed in these accounts that were marked restricted and should not have been restricted, and therefore could be used to fill in the gaps from funding that had been, you know, borrowed essentially from the water and sewer portions of the Sewage and Water Board to pay for all of these emergency drainage issues that emerged after the flooding in 2017.
So, David, I guess, you know, as I said in the opening, on the one hand, this is a negative, but on the other, it can be viewed as a positive because they are uncovering things and or practices that were done in the past and bringing it to the forefront, which actually helps their financial picture, which is a good thing. Obviously, the jury's still out because you want to know to make sure that they're making meaningful changes where this stuff doesn't happen again, right?
Exactly. I mean, one thing, that there was another place where we had a very high-profile discovery in the past week, and that was when they were looking at their turbines and trying to figure out ways, you know, that's the power generators that they've been using for over 100 years in the power plant to run the pumps. When they were looking at that, they realized that clear water that's been treated for drinking water was being used to cool the steam that is used to create the power for the generators. And this was another thing where Korban had wanted to look at moving away from steam power, doing things in a more efficient way, because steam-powered turbines actually cost four times as much as simply purchasing electricity from Entergy. And when he was looking at that, they discovered that there was this issue that's actually a violation of environmental and health codes. And they then were penalized by the Louisiana Health Department for doing it that way, but it's something they've been doing for 100 years without even realizing that it was a violation. So there's all kinds of things that they're discovering, and what when it comes out and when we report on it, it looks like just more ineptitude by the Sewerage and Water Board, but it's being exposed as a part of a process for actually trying to deal with this stuff and fix things. You know, we have to make sure that that actually happens, but that's where it seems to be coming from.
Yeah, and just when we thought we would never have to hear about turbines again, you know, what Mr. Corbin is doing is exactly why they brought him in, a fresh set of new eyes looking at different things, as you so appropriately pointed out. And I guess for the most part, they've been transparent about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they would be best served by really putting this stuff out, you know,
in a more proactive way. Yeah.
In a more proactive way, and not when things kind of pop up suddenly and then they're scrambling. But by and large, you're right. I mean, we saw this with the two supervisors who were asleep when they needed the approval to be able to kick in a new pump to try to keep the water pumping when there was a power loss about 2 months ago in November. And they were upfront about it after they were asked by the council to report about it. So, you know, I think they could be a little more proactive, but generally speaking, they are addressing these things head on. And it's kind of like the, you know, darkest before the dawn when you when you start uncovering these things. It looks really bad, but it's because these things are coming to light a lot more. I'll say this, you know, with the discovery about this turbine or these turbines being cleaned with the drinking water, you know, they were really intent on making it clear that this was not a health hazard and it was more of a kind of, you know, technicality violation of the health code, but could expose the drinking water to problems if it wasn't addressed. And the way that they're trying to address it is by limiting the use of these steam turbines, particularly turbine number 4, which was this one turbine that I had investigated years ago and shown how it had been a big boondoggle in trying to fix it, and it had taken 7 years and $43 million to fix it. Well, they finally got it fixed and finished spending that $43 million in November. And now here we are, and part of trying to deal with this issue with the cooling and the drinking water is to actually reduce that to almost no usage. So it's what they should have done in the first place. And Corbin told me, I said to him, well, you know, they've been telling the Sewerage and Water Board to stop using these steam-powered turbines for decades. In fact, in 1994, a consultant told them that they should start weaning themselves off of this over the next 20 years, and they didn't do it. And so here we are, and all of this money has been poured into fixing them based on a decision that was made by Mayor Mitch Landrieu back in 2012 on how to spend some money from FEMA. And now we have to deal with the fact that that money is not only not the best use of the money, but it looks like it is going to end up being a complete and total waste, because by taking that $43 million project and rendering it essentially useless going forward, it is totally money down the drain.
And I guess a difficulty for those listening to your Down the Drain series is, and you've tried to put it in its proper perspective, that Mr. Corbin comes in, what, in August of 2018. He hasn't been here that long, right? And
right.
Has made a number of revelations. And it's almost as if we have to take one step backwards in order to go two steps forward. And that's a very frustrating process.
Yeah. And, you know, part of my job as a reporter is to explain to people how things happen when they go wrong and who's responsible. And I'm sure, you know, Mr. Corbin told me, you know, we're trying to look forward, we're trying to move forward, And I understand that, but the public wants to know who's making these bad decisions, even if they're long gone. And it appears that a lot of it goes back to Cedric Grant and Mayor Mitch Landrieu. And, you know, Cedric Grant was Mitch Landrieu's deputy mayor, and he installed him as the head of the Sewage and Water Board. And we showed in Down the Drain, Katie Moore did some really fine reporting showing how he was torn in all kinds of different directions, trying to do multiple jobs, not really focused on the day-to-day issues of the Sewage and Water Board, more on issues of climate change and going around the world talking about climate change. And while that's happening, you know, Rome is burning.
Yeah.
And now you look back, and it's frustrating to see someone like Corbaugh come in there and say, okay, what we need to do is get rid of this steam and stop using the steam power. It's so inefficient. It's so old. It's so dangerous. You know, it could be even a health hazard when you look at these, using the drinking water to cool the steam. So let's just move away from it. But when you couple that with knowing that we've just spent $43 million on that one turbine over 7 years to get it back, and this decision means that it won't be used, it's just extremely frustrating because you're thinking, that's $43 million we could have used better. And somebody should pay the price for having mismanaged our public money.
Yeah, namely, and you guys did a story on this too, a power station, so that if you hit one power pole, the whole system doesn't go down.
Yeah. Right, and that, yeah, $43 million would be plenty of money any way you slice it, even if you use the larger estimates that Corbaugh has used recently of $40 to $50 million to totally install a brand new substation from Entergy dedicated to bringing hardened power in that won't be susceptible to losing, you know, to a car hitting a power pole or a Mylar balloon hitting a power line or whatever. If you're going to get that, which is so critical to being able to rely on Entergy power going forward and save money and not have to rely on these steam turbines, then, you know, you could have, that's $43 million that you just poured into something that you're not going to use again. It's really unbelievable.
And when you put it in that perspective, it's a little hard to square up the positive, but I think you have to give credit where credit's due. And I think there's going to be more of that. And actually, for us, we probably want more of that because that means things are getting looked into and things are changing. David Hammer, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you so much for your work on the Down the Drain investigation by WWL-TV. We truly appreciate your time.
Thanks, Newell.
All righty, we'll be right back. We want to hear from you. Can you take that one step backward in order to go two steps forward? And are you fine with that? We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. On the Blue Runner opinion poll, do you view the revelation of found money at the Sewage and Water Board as a good thing or bad thing? 67% of the respondents say it's a bad thing. You know, it is kind of a little bit of a slippery slope. Mr. Corbin comes in, and he's given a mandate to look at this organization from top to bottom, from bottom to top, and look at it from any number of different angles to kind of see where it went wrong in the past and how they ended up in the predicament that they find themselves in today. And in doing so, there's going to be these revelations. Obviously, this was an accounting mishap to have this restricted money account sitting out there, and no one really knew what it was about and how it was, whether or not it was being properly accounted for. Obviously, somebody somewhere somehow set the account up. Someone knew about it. Someone should have communicated about it, that there was this pot of money available to the Sewage and Water Board to be dealt with. There seems to me that they also should have had a lot more current information about reimbursements coming in from FEMA. Having done that myself as the CFO of the Sheriff's Office and as the leader of the Sheriff's Office and working with my accounting team, I would always get updates from my Director of Accounting, my CFO, to tell me where we stood on FEMA reimbursements because it was critical to our financial position in our financial statements. and were always very curious and always had to keep an eye on the ball with FEMA to make sure that you were continuing to push them and push the edges of the envelope with them to make sure that they would make these reimbursements. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. It's a process that's very frustrating, but it just seems to me, yet again, another challenge for Mr. Corbin is going to be bringing folks in that understand this process and can keep their eye on the ball, so to speak, which obviously wasn't done before. But the facts are is that I view this more as a positive than a negative. In remediating the ills of the past, Mr. Corbin's going to have to bring things that are not good through any lens for his organization. And that's what we want him to do. And I don't know that we want to create a chilling effect and just go over the top being critical of him as he brings these issues forward that need to be remediated. It is a challenge, and it is frustrating. And there are any number of issues that folks can be upset about, in my view, and we've talked about those extensively, not only on from our perspective here at WWL Radio, but we've had David Hammer and any number of folks on the Down the Drain investigative team talking about this as well, as these revelations have come to the forefront. And at the same time, there are going to be decisions that are going to be made by Mr. Corbin that will be evaluated. And, you know, we certainly hold his feet to the fire, and I think that was the point that David Hammer was making, is that you almost feel like you need to give credit where credit's due. And maybe they should be a little bit more forthright in coming forward with these mishaps, but I understand the frustration where you feel like every morning you're waking up and you're just getting your brain speed in over a lot of things that you did not have any control over. What it does bring to the forefront, though, is that there was not, by any stretch of the imagination, a lot of oversight into some basic business practices of any type of organization. And when you end up having these accounting mishaps, and a $25 million one is a big one, and then you know that you've got a $21.9 million outstanding balance, and I suggest that it's probably larger than that, but there was a PO that was probably, or a PA that was probably being satisfied with the $21.9 million, you might want to let people know that you're anticipating this money any day, and you're working with the federal government in order to process this and everything else. So it gives them an increase in days cash on hand, but they are quick to remind us that the drainage system continues to borrow money in order to meet the expenses and the financial obligations that they have in order to keep this system going. We want to hear from you when we return. This is Newell on WWL. On a Blue Runner opinion poll, do you view the revelation of found money at the Sewage and Water Board as a good thing or a bad thing? 56% of the respondents say it's a bad thing. Let's go to line one, talk to Tom in Houma. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hi, thank you. I had a really quick question. I understand that a public servant from New Orleans was going around the world talking about global warming on the taxpayer's dime. Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct.
Okay, what does he have a college degree or something that would kind of be like, hey, I know I'm a guy who knows a lot about global warming, and I just got to share
It was a policy perspective that Mayor Landrieu was engaged in you know, kind of going around the country. He gave a number of speeches himself. He actually had a number of directives issued to members of his staff in the city of New Orleans, and Cedric Grant was one. I think he spoke at the Aspen Institute. There may have been an overseas trip where he spoke, and I know the mayor did so as well about these issues. And that was the point David Hammer made from WWL-TV. All the while, Rome is burning. And, you know, in the system, that we're talking about moving water, whether it be the drainage system or simply getting water bills correct, where the whole thing was crumbling.
Okay, so my question here is, what does global warming somewhere else in the world have to do with the sewage in New Orleans, or anything to do with New Orleans, for that matter?
The irony is that they were talking about the trials and tribulations that a coastal city like New Orleans was going to have to face in light of global warming. But the realities were we weren't even facing the trials and tribulations of the challenges that we had today. You know, simply a rainstorm.
Whenever New Orleans talks about global warming and flooding, our issues are mainly from a levee that's been constructed around the river that deposited sediment in an efficient fashion, to which now it's just dumping it off the continental slope. So, I mean, to say global warming and a sea rise that, in my opinion, to the evidence that I've seen, doesn't really seem to jive, as like this is a really big emergency that's going to happen. Because, I mean, honestly, even with the global warming crowd, they used to call themselves global warming. Now it's climate change after that whole scandal with East Anglia where they were cooking their books for academic purposes or whatever. It baffled me to no end that we have somebody from New Orleans who's supposed to be a civil servant going around making political speeches on the taxpayer's dime. And you're like, look, if somebody wants to be an advocate or whatever, fine. And if you want to lean on your academic credentials to make these assertions, that's fine. But, you know, I just don't understand how we get so far away from the idea of providing services to the public that all of a sudden we're doing public advocacy on the taxpayer's role. I mean, how does this even happen?
Well, I mean, I think you raise a good point. Part of the problem is that they were telling people that we were managing water well, that we were living with water and doing it appropriately, when the truth is we were not. And what we're finding out now and what's being brought to the forefront, and that's kind of the slippery slope in one of the reasons that we discussed this issue with David Hammer, is as we uncover these things, is it a bad or a good thing? And I'm kind of leaning more to it's a good thing, because that's exactly why we hired Ghassan Corbin, why the mayor hired him, a new set of eyes, fresh eyes from outside, not tainted of the institutional line of thinking that has gone on here for years and years and years that obviously has got us nowhere. And as they bring these issues forward, I feel a little bit of a sense of guilt in being critical of the organization, because this is exactly what we want them to do, because you can't remedy a problem until you identify the problem, right?
Well, yeah, it sounds like it's good to admit you have a problem, in as much as, you know, it's good for an alcoholic to admit they have a problem.
Right.
But, you know, that being said, the great irony is that if we threw tax dollars at advocating for something like global warming, and now these two guys look like buffoons or whatever, you know, they haven't lended any credibility to that. So we didn't even get our money's worth on that, was supposed to be something we should do.
I couldn't have said it better myself. You are absolutely correct. We got no return on that investment. Zero. In fact,
thank you very much, Norman. You have a good day.
All righty, Tom. And I think Tom raises a good point. In fact, to the contrary, I think it puts us in a position of looking more like idiots, because we're out there advocating on all of this stuff as though we're an expert in the field. And meanwhile, we have businesses flooding. We have boil water advisories. We have all of these things. And we're talking about how well we manage certain things. And the truth be told, we didn't manage them very well at all. And I think that's a slippery slope that Mr. Corbin has moving forward. And maybe we have to give him a little bit of a pass moving forward as he brings these issues to the forefront, because without adequately identifying the issue, it's hard to work through the remediation if the accountability stream there stands in the way of them actually being able to do something to remediate. Want to know what you're thinking? Give us a call, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. We'll continue this conversation when we return. This is Newell on WWL. On the Blue Runner opinion poll, do you view the revelation of found money at the Sewage and Water Board as a good thing or a bad thing? 53% of the respondents say it is a good thing. On the text line, folks are saying, sounds like a good way to get a paid vacation. Yeah, I mean, I get that. And Newell, it's simple. We just want the pumps to work and no more outages. We don't want to have to work every time it rains. And I think, you know, it unfortunately for us, it gets down to being that simplistic. You know, do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing? Give us a call, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. Do you continue to be frustrated? Now, you know, I was talking to some folks the other day, and they were still having trouble with their water bill. And, you know, and they were asking, Newell, do you have any idea how long this is going to be before we're able to get our water bill that's not estimated, that's actually based on a meter reading as opposed to a guesstimate? And, you know, we're going to try and have some folks from Sewage and Water Board on the show to try and get some answers to those questions, because I think people are growing and still increasingly frustrated month after month after month with not being able to find out whether or not, you know, their water bill is right and whether it's based on a reading. And there were stories of many fluctuations as it relates to these water bills. And I don't know about you folks, and this is where I'm a little bit torn. I want to give Mr. Corbin time to get this resolved. But getting bills out is really kind of low-hanging fruit. Having said that, I guess it all depends on how bad your technology infrastructure actually is in the organization. But there are programs that you can almost get off the shelf for billing. I mean, this is not rocket science. It's something that's dealt with in the business world every day, creating a bill and getting it out. And there are water systems in every jurisdiction in this country. And there has to be some very high-performing ones that utilize high-performing computer programs that have figured out the best way, and whether you minimize your contact with customers by addressing commercial customers first, by maybe offering them some kind of deal or otherwise, to go to computerized water meters so that you don't have to worry about reading all of those, and offering a discount or something in the near future where they can reduce their fixed operating cost of water bills, and that helps finance and move your human capital to go and read the meters of the residents that are out there. And going back to the issue that we've discussed before about blighted housing, actually there should be less in number of active water meters today than there were pre-Katrina, because you have all of these properties and you have the next door program where people bought properties next door to them, where now there's a consolidation of 2 meters into one. And it would be interesting to see the numbers there, because the necessity for the number of meter readers should have gone down. There are less to read. And when you're dealing with the large projects like the apartment groups where they have large number of units and things of that nature, we should work out a way to have a computerized type of water meter there and help them create a situation where there's a collaboration between the private sector and the public sector in the financing of this technology, moving forward by taking a little bit less on the front end in order to get a bigger gain on the back end. I don't know. It's just these things come to the forefront, and I don't understand why we just can't get our hands around some of this low-hanging fruit. And I would think that there would be those in the commercial environment that would absolutely participate in these programs and help finance it. And maybe it should require a change in building permits from this point forward that has to be put in to a commercial business. And that has to be transmitted electronically to the Sewage and Water Board. But the Sewage and Water Board's got to be in a position to be able to receive this information in that fashion. And I think there would be less criticism of folks if they did it at that point in time. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. This is Newell on WWL. On a Blue Runner opinion poll, do you view the revelation of found money at the Sewage and Water Board as a good or bad thing? 50% say bad thing, 50 say good thing. Let's go to Raymond on line 2 in Araby. What say you, Raymond?
Hey, Noel, how you doing?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm still sick over that Saints game, but anyway, I want to tell you that I have a home in Araby and New Orleans, and in Araby, they ride around in a truck, and it automatically picks up the signal for the water meter. New Orleans, they still walking the route, and, of course, walking the route is going to take more time. So they just need to get with the program and get updated with their system.
Yeah, I would just hope that they articulate a transition to getting an electronic way of dealing with this. And I think it would restore public confidence in this system. The sooner that they get there, the better. And I'm not sure what the right way is, but I think if they start with their commercial clients and make that mandatory for all new buildings, they can begin to relieve themselves of the human capital needs that they have to go out and read the water meters. Just a point of view. Raymond?
Well, I'm challenging an issue right now where I have received a $289 water bill, and it was on auto pay.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I challenged it, I did not know they took me off of auto pay. And then 3 months went by, I received a bill for like $600. And it's like, because the late charges occurred and stuff, and like no one told me they pulled me off of auto pay.
And that's not a smart thing to pull you off of auto pay, because you get your money right then and there when they bill you, right? I mean, I don't understand that.
Right. But they pulled me off of auto pay, and then they said to me, why did they get more money? Because they charged me the late fees, and I'm trying to get the late fees waived.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense,
like,
Raymond.
Oh, someone's going to call you, and this was 3 months going on. It did not happen.
Raymond, thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. And, you know, the statement that the Sewage and Water Board made at the end was that they're saying, we're working hard to stabilize this critical utility, but we continue to be faced with ongoing, sustained funding challenges that can't be fixed indefinitely with one-time reimbursements. And that's their public information officer, Rich Rainey, who said that. Scoot joins me in the studio. Scoot?
You know, somebody sent a text last week telling me that these mysterious booms that people are hearing, they're designed to keep the Sewage and Water Board employees awake. All right, so look, this is really sad.
Don't you love the creativity of our listening audience?
I do. They're amazing. I love when they get involved in the show like that. More car break-ins in Lakeview, and I guess the question is, why is Lakeview such a hot target? I'll ask you, former sheriff, why is Lakeview such a hot target? Is it because maybe there's not a lot of police activity there, and they think there's some money in the area?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it probably goes on throughout the parish. It did in Jefferson as well, where they're going through and they're lifting car handles to see if they can get in there and do a vehicle burglary, and in some cases actually stealing vehicles. But when you go into the higher priced neighborhoods, you get better quality product.
Stuff,
it's like the difference between shopping at Walmart and Barney's, right? I mean, it's just not the same.
Yeah, you could steal from Target or you could steal from Saks.
Saks. There you go.
So, you wonder if people who leave their cars unlocked and leave anything of value in the car, that they're actually financing criminal behavior.
Well, they're ruining crime stats, that I can promise you, because most times vehicle burglars are not going to break in the car because they know there's an alarm there.
Yeah.
So.
All right, I can't wait to talk about the Grammys. No Trump bashing. The Grammys, no politics. So if you knew the Grammys were not going to be political, would you have watched it if you knew that?
I read your post. It was good to hear because I didn't watch it. I watched Netflix last night.
Yeah, I wonder if award shows are going to start to get the message that people want politics and entertainment separated, or if they just they just figured that people are to the saturation point with all of this, and they're just sick and tired of even joking about politics. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. The narcissistic view of Hollywood, I tend to think otherwise. This may just be a little brief hiatus.
Probably.
All righty. Scoot's up next. Got a great show. Stay tuned. He'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.